Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, all you amazing, lovely HR and people folks. Thanks so much for coming back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I am your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know us, we're your friendly HR dashboard, helping you bring all your data from all your different systems into one centralized real-time place. And this is so timely because one of those systems that we actually talked to, one of the co-founders of that company, is actually on our podcast today. So I hope that all of you will help me give a warm and big welcome to Shane Metcalf, co-founder and chief culture officer at 15five. And today we're going to talk about how to make employees better versions of themselves. Shane, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Nothing like a warm welcome. Bruce, really good to be on. I'm really happy that we were able to find some time to have this conversation. Let's dig in.
Great. So, Shane, I know you told me earlier that you listened to one of the previous podcasts of ours, so you already know the deal. The first question that we always ask is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR? And with that, please give us a quick summary and background about 15five and the great work you're doing.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I kind of have a bone to pick with the word HR. You know, we've even thought about doing a no HR campaign, because we actually think that the language we use is really powerful. And one of the things that I talk a lot about is that humans aren't resources. You know, like, we're actually fully fledged human beings, not like coal that should be shoveled into the furnace, burned, extracted value from, and then thrown away. We actually think that it's detrimental to think of your people as resources and rather to start thinking about them as potential to be unlocked. Anyway, I'm not going to harp on that point that much more. So the question of how did I end up in this world of, you know, people operations, as I think a better term. And, you know, it's interesting. I've had a very nonlinear path, as I'm sure most of the guests that you've had on this podcast are going to kind of share that they didn't wake up thinking that they were going to go into running people ops. Now, I would say that it all stems back to my high school. And I had a really cool high school. It was a private school in northern New Mexico where I grew up, Taos, New Mexico. And I had this cool school. It was just like 50 of us in all four grades. The principal used to design colleges with Buckminster Fuller, who's this crazy philosopher, way ahead of his time, inventor and thought leader. And we would do all kinds of things that now when I look back on were all brilliant cultural engineering. You know, core values, weekly rituals that would bring everybody together, self-expression, enabling and supporting the whole human being in their growth and development, not just the academic development. And so in hindsight, I see how it all played together, because from that, I got really obsessed with the human potential movement and things like integral theory, Ken Wilber's work, and just kind of how do you actually create meaningful growth and transformation in a human being. And so that led me into executive coaching, and which I did for quite a while, really fascinated by organizational development. How do you build highly cohesive leadership teams? So I coached dozens of startups on how do you actually tell the truth to your co-founders? I facilitated a lot of co-founder divorces. So I got all this insight into what goes wrong. How does culture and values get off the rails, and how do you bring it back on? And so that was a lot of what, starting 15five, I began with that inspiration of saying, let's do this right from day one. Let's build in place these cultural foundations and cultural values so that we don't end up failing as a company because of the interpersonal drama.
Nice. So I love the fact that you are really leading the charge that humans aren't resources. And then that's one of the reasons why we're now really changing and transforming into this people operations world. So before we get into the topic, even though this is slightly tied to it, I want to get your take about humans not being resources and the bone that you have to pick with the term HR.
Yeah, well, the HR came out of the kind of industrial revolution that was seeing companies are like machines and we need to have cheap labor that's essentially disposable, that we can kind of feed people in on one end of the meat grinder and we get a product on the other side. And we don't really need to be that concerned with the effect and the impact on the human being, because ultimately it's what the business goal is the most important thing. And the human interests are, you know, secondary, if that, maybe tertiary, if they even make it onto the spreadsheet at all. And so my bone to pick with human resources, you know, Dan Pink said it really well. He said, business is just starting to realize that humans are not single-minded economic robots, but fully fledged human beings. And I think that the term human resources reduces these dynamic, complex animals that we are down to the single-minded economic robot. And that we can easily reduce all of the wonders and challenges of a human being into something as simple as a resource is a shame and is part of what has contributed to the crisis of engagement that we are experiencing in this country and in the world.
I see. And do you believe that this migration and transformation HR is moving into people operations is heading in the right direction? Or do you think that we need to go even beyond people operations and make this transformation quicker, or something potentially really bad will happen with the workforce?
Well, I think that is moving in the right direction. And this whole emergence of people and culture as a category, I think, is absolutely in the right direction. Now, something really interesting is Claude Silver, who's one of my sheroes and is the chief heart officer of VaynerMedia, Gary Vaynerchuk's company. And what I find so fascinating is that, again, this is a play on of semantics, that somebody who traditionally would have the role of chief people officer actually has the role of chief heart officer. And she says her job is to take care of and tend to the 800 heartbeats in that company. And it's so cool because, again, it really changes. You change the language and you change the way that you think about it. Language is really powerful. Language is how we construct our reality and how we make sense of things. And so I think that shifting away from this old paradigm of human resources into people and culture is a little bit closer to the reality of what we're actually talking about. Because, you know, a lot of companies say, oh, bring your whole self to work. We want to support the whole human being. And what we need to do is we need to design organizations and management structures that actually do, in fact, support the whole human being, not just one slice of it.
I was fortunate enough to attend the event where you interviewed Claude in New York, and that was awesome. We're actually going to have Claude on a upcoming episode, which is going to be great because I also love that chief heart officer. So that makes a lot of sense. Now let's go back to the actual topic of how to make employees better versions of themselves. And because you wanted to talk about this, I'm assuming you don't think that companies, and more specifically leaders, are doing a good job of helping employees become the best versions of themselves. And so let's talk about why don't you think that's happening, and then how do we need to make that happen?
I think that's all in right timing. I think that capitalism is always driven by monetary concerns and how do we actually maximize profit. And what's really cool is that we're now starting to understand that by helping people be and become the best version of themselves, that is good for business. And that's what's so encouraging, because there is economic incentive for companies to get better at this and to really knock it out of the park when it comes to creating a culture of belonging and helping people grow and develop. And so one of the ways that I really like to think about this is that historically, business has been concerned about the bottom two rungs of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And what I mean by that is that businesses would provide a safe space. They're going to pay their people enough to feed themselves and their families and have their basic physiological needs covered. And they're going to create a physically safe workspace. What we are now realizing is that if a company helps to nourish and feed all levels of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So, you know, there's physiology and safety, but then you get into belonging and esteem. And above that is self-realization. And so if you design your culture so that you can be contributing to all of those levels, you are going to transform people's lives and you are going to reap the benefits of that as a company. Because when people feel a sense of belonging, they don't want to leave. When people are growing and developing their self-esteem, they're going to be excited to then use those gifts to contribute back. And in that sense of self-realization, or what we call best self, that is where growth and contribution become the top priority. So you're going to want to continue growing. You're going to want to elevate the people around you. And so that's the opportunity that companies have. Don't just focus on the bottom two rungs. Focus on the full spectrum of human needs, and your people will transform and you will realize the full potential of your company.
So now there's songs singing about I'm living my best life. There's a lot of memes out there saying I'm living my best life. And when I see all this, I think it's funny and telling, because when I'm looking at this, sometimes I'm asking myself, do people, generally speaking, know what the best version of themselves is? And how do they figure out what's the best life? Are you living the best life every day? Is that a goal that you need to reach? And so how do companies really figure out on an individual and personalized basis, what is that goal?
Yeah, you know, and I think that it's such a great question because there's no cookie cutter answers. So much of what we're actually saying is that, look, there are some models that can really help illuminate the path. Things like helping people develop radical strengths awareness. What are somebody's innate strengths and how can you cultivate them? What's their zone of genius? What is their personality type, like an Enneagrams or Myers-Briggs? All of these different reflections that we can get of who we are capable of being at our best. But when it comes to that very personal question of what does it truly mean for me to actually be living my life at the best? Well, that is a personal question, but what we're saying is that it should no longer only be the domain and the responsibility of the individual, but that we can actually start having that conversation as a company, as a manager, as an individual contributor, and saying the vehicle, you know, that like 15-5 is the vehicle for me and every other employee here to ask that question, to listen to the answers, to get curious about what their own path really is, about what their highest values are, what their hidden passions might be, what their undiscovered strengths are capable of, and use this company as a vehicle to realize the answers to that question. And so that's not so much of, hey, come in and we're going to kind of stamp best self on each person, but it's an individualized journey of self-inquiry and self-reflection that leads to transformation.
So because this is such a personalized and customized process, how does a company that typically succeeds when it becomes as streamlined and process-driven as possible do this at such an individual level? So the example that I thought of that was started to come together in my mind when you were talking about this is education. So there's people who learn very well in big stadium-sized classrooms. There are other people that can only learn very well in a private school setting where maybe there's 3 to 5 kids a class. There are other people that can do online. There are other people that can do a hybrid. Some people don't really care. They can process the information and then synthesize it and spit it back at you. And they've really had a great experience regardless of how they're getting the info with the education. So how does a company do this when so many people might need such a different personalized and customized experience to become their best self?
Yeah. And you've got to have a variety of different ways of exploring this. It's not like there's one course you do and people are their best self. And so I want to take a step back because it has to start with intention. You know, if me as a business leader come in and I'm starting my company and all I actually care about is making money and Maybe I pay lip service to the idea of people development and helping people be and become their best selves, but I don't actually mean it. It's not going to work because I'm not going to be investing. I'm not going to be incorporating that as part of my higher purpose as a company. So much of what we are training business leaders to think about is expanding the context of why your company exists. That yes, to make money, to fulfill your purpose as an organization, but that it should also be to grow and develop incredible human beings. Because from that, all kinds of cool things fall into place on their own. Just letting your people know that that is the intention that you're coming to the table with, that when they sign up and they say yes to joining your company, and you let them know, look, I want you to have one of, if not the best professional experiences of your life, and for you to leave a happier, healthier, more competent, more fulfilled version of yourself. That's what I'm committed to. I'm not quite sure how we're going to get there, but we're going to do it together. That's when it becomes really powerful. That's when you start to innovate and develop your own programs around this thing. You know, we stand on the shoulders of giants, which no longer as much of a mystery about the keys to human growth and development. You know, you look at Carol Dweck's book on mindset. You look at Kim Scott's book on radical candor. Look at all of these different systems and bodies of work. I mean, everything coming out of positive psychology. We now know that if you help people focus on what's going well in their life, that you can begin to rewire the brain and actually start to pay attention to the good things and not just all of the bad things. Because when we're only paying attention to the bad things, we're in constant risk assessment. And our brain is more likely to be in more a fight or flight state rather than in the creative capacities of the brain that are around problem solving and collaboration. So there's so many different approaches to helping people become their best self. And no one solution is perfect for everybody. But what you do want to create is you want to create a lot of feedback loops inside of your company so that you're asking more questions, you're having better conversations, both at the individual manager and employee level, as well as at the leadership and kind of HR people operations level.
So let's break this down into three stages so that our listeners can have some tangible and actionable takeaways after this episode.
Oh man, I don't know if I've ever broken it down into three stages. I hope you know what you're doing here, Bruce.
All right, well, we're going to try. The first thing is, how do I, as an HR people ops leader, identify the individuals who are not the best versions of themselves? Is that through performance reviews? Is that through emotional intelligence and really just trying to figure out who may not be happy here? Is that through engagement surveys? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, I would first start with yourself, because HR leaders, people operations leaders, often have so much of their attention on other people that they neglect themselves. And so the first question to be asking is, am I a better version of myself for having worked at this company? And really be honest with that. And think about, well, okay, if so, what has contributed to that? Is it my manager? Is it some of our cultural principles? Is it the purpose of the company? And really actually start to being in an inquiry around, okay, cool, yeah, how am I relating to that? And maybe if it isn't, maybe if you're more stressed and less happy and, you know, your health's in decline and you dread coming to work every day, that's really valuable information. And that's when you need to understand, okay, am I committed to helping to turn this ship around? Or do I want to go somewhere with a healthier culture that actually supports these ideas? Because we have, you know, more power as an employee than we've ever had before, which is a really interesting phenomenon, which is, again, another business reason why business leaders need to get this locked down, is that people no longer feel the obligation to stay in crappy companies. And so if you aren't doing this, you're going to lose the war for talent. So start with yourself. Am I a better version for having worked at this company? And then starting to look around and yeah, you know, I mean, engagement surveys are good for getting anonymous feedback. You know, 15-5, like I asked a question in 15-5, are you a better version of yourself for having worked at this company? You know, we got a 97% yes to that question. And again, like, one of the things we talk about a lot is employee lifetime value. And so with employee lifetime value, or ELTV for short, is how long does somebody stay at your company and how much value do they produce over time? And so if you can extend your ELTV by a couple of months and by a couple of points higher in value, it has profound economic implications for your company.
Wow.
This stuff is extremely valuable. This is not all kumbaya, let's feel good, let's be happy. This is hard business intelligence. This is how do you win in a hyper-competitive world where your competitors are going to be building a product that will wipe you off the face of the earth if you do not put all of the energy and resources of your company into actually building the product and servicing your customers. Because think about how much crap most companies deal with around internal politics and people suffering from a lack of psychological safety and putting all of their energy into just surviving and covering their ass.
So now that I've done some introspection to see, am I the best version of myself as the HR leader? And I've followed the steps that you laid out, which were great around productivity, performance, surveys. And now I start to understand who is and who is not the best versions of themselves. For the people who are not, what are some of the things that I can do now to help these employees become the best versions of themselves? And I know, yes, it has to be personalized and customized, but just what are some examples across a couple categories that you've seen to work or that you've implemented at 15.5 for you to make the best workforce possible?
So once you have a sense of your baseline of whether, you know, some people are experiencing becoming a better version of themselves, some people aren't, what you want to do is you want to use cultural engineering to create positive brain states. And so what I mean by that is that I could put you and me in a brain scan right now, and we could tell so much information about whether our brain was in negative, neutral, or positive. And I know this is a gross oversimplification of brain states, but it's useful for our purposes because we can see, is somebody primarily in their fight or flight, where there's this risk assessment going on, or are they in the higher functions of the brain and the neocortex? And is it all working in harmony together? And so what we can do is we can actually engineer positive brain states. We can, like, we do a thing on every Monday morning before our company all hands meeting, where we go over all the financials of the company, is we do 5 minutes of a gratitude meditation. And we just pick some random ass topic to explore our gratitude around, whether it be our mothers, the internet, our shoes, toilet paper, indoor plumbing, you know, anything that it helps actually. And this is just an easy hack from positive psychology, which is if you focus on what you're grateful for, you will move your brain into a positive state, and that has really profound implications for long-term happiness. So it's one of the simplest things that we do, but it has a huge impact. I have people that come in here, and this one person told me, he was like, oh yeah, the first 3 months, I thought this gratitude meditation thing was total bullshit. But now I always am thinking about what I'm grateful for, and it's changed my life. It's simple things like that. Create systems for recognition and appreciation. You should have a 5-to-1 positive to negative emotional interactions. And the easiest way to do that is to start saying thank you more. Most people do not say thank you enough to their team, to their company. We have a feature called High Fives. And so when you write your weekly 15.5, we just ask you, who did amazing work? Who made a positive difference in your week? And you give them a high five. And there's this like positivity feed of tons of recognition and appreciation bouncing and flying around the whole company. And so as soon as we launch inside of a company, the appreciation quotient immediately goes up. So thank your people. Don't think that it's only millennials that want continuous feedback and recognition for their good work. Everybody does. You are never going to break somebody or turn them into an entitled millennial just by saying thank you.
And then as a CEO of an HR analytics company, I'd be doing a disservice to myself if I didn't ask, how does the HR person now measure whether their efforts worked or not? Or is this something that you can measure?
Well, look, I mean, I think that you shouldn't be overly obsessed with measuring it in the first place, because there is such a thing as subjective well-being that if I was to, you know, try to measure the value and the return of on investment of my mom, for instance, could I really demonstrate that? No, but I feel her love. I feel her support. And that is invaluable. And if somebody ever tried to measure that, I'd, you know, be like, wow, good luck. And I don't care, because some of these things you shouldn't try to obsess over. But I mean, look, all you have to do is you start looking at your employee lifetime value, start looking at the average tenure of your employees, start looking at your engagement scores, and that will all reflect these kinds of practices. Don't get me wrong, best self isn't just about the pleasantries and recognition and being able to study and learn things that are meaningful to you. Best self can be a brutal knockdown, hard conversations, talking about the things that nobody really wants to talk about. It's about learning how to give and receive honest, candid feedback. It's about discovering our blind spots and having those really uncomfortable conversations where people call us up to a higher level of operating. It's not all easy. The journey to become your best self is probably one of the hardest things any human can ever do, because we all have blind spots. We all have learned ways of being and doing that don't actually serve ourselves or other people around us. And it's about getting that feedback and reflection from our peers so that we can actually have awareness. We can grow in self-awareness, and we can begin to start being so a little less defensive about our shortcomings. And we can bring some light to those parts of ourselves and figure out, okay, great. Do I want to just bring somebody on to my team that is genius at that, and I can offload that work for him so that I can focus on maximizing my zone of genius? I really want to emphasize that best self-management is not for the faint of heart. This isn't just a picnic.
Shane, you've already exceeded my expectations, and there's already 3 or 4 other podcast topics that I want to cover with you on different podcast episodes, like cultural engineering. That stuff just blows my mind. This was awesome. But now I want to move into my favorite part of the episode, which is what I call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
I like real, random, ridiculousness.
All right. So the real question.
I feel like that could be a contender for your podcast name, by the way, is the real, the random, and the ridiculous. I'd listen to that show.
I do think it's a cool name. So the real question, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Ooh, sometimes I am on a more ketogenic diet, in which case I'd like to convince myself that I do not like bread pudding, so I suffer less when it is an option on the menu. But the truth is, yes, I do like bread pudding. I prefer my bread pudding with like some varied textures in it. So I don't know, maybe some currants. Or maybe, crazy with some goji berries in there or something. A little bright spot amongst the creamy softness of a good bread pudding. A little caramel sauce never hurts as well.
Speaking my language, next time we're either in SF in New York, we're in the same room, we're definitely having bread pudding for sure.
Maybe I will be off my keto diet at that point too.
Okay, maybe I need to work around your schedule then. You let me know. You send me your keto diet calendar, and then I'll pick dates after when you're done.
It's random, though, which gets us to the next question, right?
It is. So, random question. What's your favorite way to show yourself self-care?
Oh, I really have a thing for luxury spas.
Fancy.
I have a vision of some point after 15-5. That I want to open up my own brand of luxury healing spas, where you bring in the best of the best healing technologies. Because we're learning all kinds of cool stuff about how to rewire the nervous system and downshift people's brains and heal trauma and all kinds of cool things. And so I want to bring together all the best elements combined with, like, I don't know if you've ever been to like luxury spas in Italy, for instance. They're just beautiful. There's an aesthetic kind of old world quality to the marble and the brick and design, kind of the coolest luxury spa on the planet. And so, Bruce, I take it upon myself to do my research. And so anytime I have an opportunity to go get a treatment and to soak in some nice pools at a luxury spa. It's my favorite way to take care of myself. Plus, I get to justify it because I'm doing research.
All right. I have to try out one of those luxury spas.
You really don't know what you're missing. And you're in New York too, right? So you've got to go to the Eyrie Ancient Baths. Really cool, old world aesthetic bathhouse in New York.
We're in Philly, but I'm always in New York.
Oh, so I'll perfect.
I'll definitely keep myself up there. And then the ridiculous question, and I know this is near and dear to your heart, but what are some of the most ridiculous ways that you've seen companies think that they're making employees the best versions of themselves, but they're really not? And so this kind of goes along the lines of companies thinking that they're engaging employees with LaCroix or ping pong tables. But to take it a step deeper, what do you think a lot of companies are doing wrong in almost in a ridiculous way where they're not really moving the needle?
Yeah, I think that companies fail first and foremost by not having a clear and compelling purpose. That you need to actually have a purpose, a higher calling as a company that people can rally around and can identify with their own purpose in life. That's the biggest mistake. If you don't have that, everything else is going to be less potent. You could build a positive culture. You can have good interactions with people. You can stock the fridge with LaCroix. You can do all those things, but they're going to be impotent because you don't have that unifying purpose. And so that is where you must start. It's not where you must end, but you need a deeper calling. Purpose-driven organizations are now proven to outperform every other company by a long shot, just by having a clear sense of purpose and communicating that purpose again and again to their employees.
Shane, you are definitely wise beyond your years. I will tell you that. This has been such an awesome episode. You've been dropping a lot of gems. And I want to reiterate that with this being our super special 50th episode, you did not let us down for sure. And like I said, there are so many other topics that I want to talk to you about already that I'm definitely going to reach out to your assistant. I might even book you out 6 months from now to definitely talk about cultural engineering and some of these other things, because a lot of this is so much needed for our audience. So without further ado, Shane, thank you so much for being on the Employee Cycle Podcast.
Bruce, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Great conversation. 30 minutes, definitely not enough time to talk about all the things that we could talk about. I look forward to being back on.
For sure. And so how can people find you and 15.5 online?
Best place is find me on LinkedIn, Shane Metcalf on LinkedIn. And you can go to 15.5.com. That is 15.5.com.
Perfect. And we'll definitely put those in the show notes. So all you listeners out there, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Shane really did light up the episode with a lot of gems and a lot of great education. And so if you want to show Shane and Employee Cycle how much you love this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Also, if you're just a fly-by listener for this episode and you really enjoyed it and you don't want to miss another episode, then please download and subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on whatever podcast you're listening to. And without further ado, all you HR and people ops leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.